Hi, my name is Michael Rosario from Saugerties, and you're listening to WGXC Acre 90.7 FM.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by SunCommon, supporting vibrant communities across New York for 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Peter McPartland of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click Donate. Thank you for your support.
Welcome to the Jazz Disturbance. A show featuring jazz and other improvisational music from local, regional, worldwide, and world-class artists, connecting listeners with the people and places presenting in the area. The Jazz Disturbance airs on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 5th Sunday of each month from our Hudson studio from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m.
Hello and welcome to the Thingularity Radio Program, broadcasting from the Cabana, high atop the hills in Catskill, New York. Normally from the Maker Syndicate, but we've all relocated due to the nice weather, and our good patron has allowed us to hang out on a porch that's got some nice weather. It's looking good. How's everybody doing?
It's perfect.
Don't mind me while I move my mic so I can be more sociable with the group. Face everybody. Cody, what's up? Say hello.
So hello, everyone.
Now the nice people know who you are. Ben.
Hey, how's it going?
All right. Our sound tech, Brian.
What, man?
Hey.
He spoke. He just talked over you.
Yeah, well, now people know who he is. And our special guest tonight, Tom Ditto.
I'm back.
Okay. That was a little bit for the... That was scary.
That was perfect. Who are you kidding?
That was scary.
All right, I'm going to put my sunglasses on, and I'm going to sit back here. I'm going to take a nap. You guys just roll with it.
You guys wanted to be angry or happy or...
I got something you could be happy about.
Yeah, do some happy.
I'm going to show you something, okay? And I know it really translates to radio very well, but it has to do with radio.
Thought that I'm going to start assigning to Albert, where he has to bring in something nice and makes me have a positive feeling about the human race.
Yeah, man. Well, first of all, I've got this purple roly-poly. It's a purple woodlouse. Its entire body was purple, including the legs.
And what's the significance of it being purple?
I don't know. I've never seen one before. They're always black or dark gray.
This is a science show, or at least it's ostensibly one, so I try to make it something like that. But if I'm just supposed to be happy at a colorful bug, you got it, bud. I am. That's awesome.
But also this. You see that?
Oh, you got the antenna!
Yeah, man. 40 some odd feet in the air.
I'm going to be blasting you with some digital data. There's some channels that shouldn't be there. Yes.
Yeah, man. We can get to resuming our digital radio experiments.
Excellent. Somehow my hilltop antenna has survived all the storms so far. It's up there. It's giving me data, so why not?
There hasn't been a lot of heavy, only 1 or 2 days of heavy wind, though, right?
There's enough to knock a couple trees over. We're going to get 21 named storms we're expecting this year, and 8 of them are going to kick our ass.
Eight of them?
8 of them.
That's going to be the average?
That's the expectation. We could get a dozen. We could get 4. But we're definitely getting 4. Let me put it that way. And we're probably getting 8. And
whoa.
You better get those trees cleaned up, people. Your stuff's going to be blowing around.
Well, that's a good warning.
Because climate change is real, and the winds are going to be a little faster. The temperatures are going to be a little bit hotter. There's going to be a little bit more water flowing around. A little bit more of everything.
If everybody in the, you know, I know that there's probably a lot of new people in our region of the world here, our little pocket of
Imported Cidiots?
No. Just people who haven't lived in the Hudson Valley for very long. But
transplants.
Oh, welcome.
Transplants.
Welcome.
Welcome to our nice valley.
You've come at a time when it seems the weather has been very destabilized. I've seen more super violent storms that take down trees in the last 5 years than I have in all the time I've lived here.
Oh, yeah.
And how old are you?
I've been here 28 years.
Well, I've been around so long. I can remember being in the eye of a hurricane down on Long Island.
Well, there you go.
You know, it's actually very Pacific inside the eye. I mean, if you could just keep up with the eye, you'd never have any problems. Just travel with the eye, go with the eye.
Specifically, stay with the eye.
Yes, well, row fast.
Well, the eye itself doesn't move insanely fast. You're talking like
20 miles an hour?
Yeah, between 20 and 100 miles an hour on like a bad day, it gets up there. But yeah, you're talking like that. And slower. And that's what sucks. When you have a storm that travels like 5 miles an hour, that's when it sits and spins and just wrecks everything. You want a fast-moving storm. Unless, of course, you're on a coast and the storm makes landfall and you are on the traditionally eastern side of that storm. The western side, because of the circulation, the Coriolis effect, the whole storm hits it comes ashore spinning. So like a baseball, one side's going to be pushing harder than the other, which kind of turns it. But that also means where it lands, the eastern side that's pushing up, because it goes counterclockwise, gets slammed, and the other side gets lessened. It still gets rain, but it doesn't get like the straight line winds and stuff like that.
The storm surge and all that other fun stuff.
That comes afterward. That passes through, and then yeah. Generally, the storm surge comes afterward, and will throw off all sorts of tide predictions. So, if I have a tide prediction on the better weather, and it's not right, well, you blame the storms.
Does it go in the opposite way and below the equator?
It does.
Oh, wow.
On the opposite side.
Is it true when you flush the toilet, right? It goes the other way?
Okay, well, you got to also... What I'm talking about is a Gulf impact, and when the storms come ashore, they're oriented in a certain direction. If the storm is spinning in the opposite direction and heads south, I would say the same thing applies. The eastern edge is still going to suck. Because it's going to be spinning clockwise, and as it descends, the right-hand side of the spinning wheel will be crashing into the ground faster. But if it goes north, opposite. Depends on your direction. This is just happens to be this sort of thing kind of lines up for us kind of deal. Which is why Louisiana usually takes it on the chin when Texas is a little nicer.
Texas is wetter.
Wetter and oilier, so, you know, don't make
it. Oilier.
Yeah, they're the greases.
And yet somehow they still can't manage to handle energy production in a...
No, but they got to be independent. They got to avoid regulation and be trying to be cheap for everybody in their state. So we got to be independent for the sake of it.
Their power plants can break down in the winter and summer.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's perfect.
And the first thing we do is blame green energy and not our own stupid people in charge.
Oh.
Oh, Greg Abbott, I got a dartboard with your face on it.
Wow.
He's bad for the world.
You get a maximum score if you hit the bozo nozo.
Exactly.
I want to soundboard him. We should soundboard him.
I like that idea. We need a good touch screen. We'll hook you up. We'll get that going. Man. But we are a community funded project, yes. So anybody wanting to make a donation. Just remember, you can head on over to WGXE.org and click on donate at any point in time. You don't have to wait for a fund drive. And I'm only saying that because this show gets a fun time slot that basically gets to skate on most of the fund drives. And going to say hello to Galen and everybody over at the station hanging out tonight because we're working.
Echo.
Don't let him trick you. We're having a pizza party over here, too.
Yeah, yeah. It was such a good idea. We couldn't help it.
Yep.
We got pizza and beer rolling around, so...
It's happening. It's happening.
Don't feel bad for us. But, like I said, everybody else out there, you just go ahead and donate because we don't get to normally participate in the fund drive.
Feel guilty if you don't.
Totally feel guilty. If you hear me and you didn't donate, man, like...
On the better weather or on this show, you know?
No, the better weather is a public service I do for everybody. I want everyone to have that. But this, this is premium out. You got to pay for this.
You're a saint. He's a saint.
It's more like Satan quoting scripture. Don't try.
Oh, man.
So, you know, our illustrious Tom Ditto came with kind of a topic. He wore it on his sleeve, not quite his sleeve.
Oh, yeah, an RPI.
On his torso.
An RPI, they have a computer system that talks to anyone that wants to help them calculate the behavior of stars and clusters in our galaxy. So this is the Milky Way at home. And if you go with that at, you know, ampersand, Milky Way, ampersand, home, you will find that you can download an app, and then you're in the background on whatever computers you use. You're calculating the behavior of stars from the past into the future. I mean, they go way into the future based on, I don't know, Newton's laws or something like that.
I think they're doing difficult calculations on the three-body problem, or more than three-body problem, right?
Yeah.
It's just a set of three-body problems.
The thing that humans can't do.
Well, I mean...
We don't got the time.
We also don't even know if it takes polynomial time, right? We don't know that we can solve it in a finite amount of time.
Correct. That's why you need... That's why the assumption is a human can't...
Well, no, it's, you know? It's not that. It's you can have a solution for a finite number of time, finite length of time. So that's what they do. They have a database that provides the current velocity and direction and the mass of the stars that they're tracking. But they can't run it out to the end of time. But then, well, by the time the end of time comes around, there are some other factors that the Milky Way is not going to be able to change because it'll be swallowed by the Andromeda galaxy. It comes by and then... The combined galaxies will be swallowed by a massive black hole.
I'm pretty sure it's going to be called the Milk Dromeda too.
Milk Dromeda.
They already named it. They already know what's going to happen.
Milk Dromeda 73.
And
so they're calculating these. They're calculating the way that the Milky Way interacted with, or is going to interact with, various of the Messier objects.
Yeah, that,
or
Messier.
did you do the French chef sound?
Who did that? That's not okay.
Julie Childs will whip up a galaxy
cake. These aren't...
Just to be clear, this is a system that anybody out there listening can participate in. It is a distributed computing project, and if for some reason space isn't your flavor, there's many, many projects out there available for you to help with.
Joe and I have experience with this system. It's called BOINC, Berkeley Open Infrastructure for Network Computing, I think, is what
it
stands for.
Close
something
enough.
Like that.
We're going to run
it
with
comes
that.
From Berkeley. The BOINC software orchestrates the work, that it sends out units of work to your computer, and...
You get the software, it runs in the background, and all your spare computer cycles get used to make the world better.
Not like crypto mining.
No, this is the opposite of that. You're taking resources and you're making the world actually better. You're actually doing things. You're trying to fold proteins at home to see if you can, you know, help medical science. You're trying to calculate the trajectory of stellar bodies to help out physicists. You're doing real things.
There was one that took data from, I think it was LIGO, and calculated, you know, gravitational waves. Tried to make calculations about gravitational waves. There's SETI at home.
You can search for extraterrestrial intelligence.
Everybody knows SETI. What else was there? I can't remember.
Anything from Berserkly deserves the name BOINC.
BOINC.
Oh, yeah.
That's cool.
That's a crazy place. I've been there. I used to live in that area in the Bay.
You didn't go there, though?
I went to San Francisco State across in the peninsula. I didn't, but I visited Berserkly.
Yeah, just to pick up checks.
I got the vibe all right. I spent a fair amount of time on Berserkly.
Hey, Tom, tell us that great story about that time that that porn producer put a hit out on you.
No.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry.
Carl Howard, if you're still alive, I'm trying to get in touch with you to, you know, round out my memoir. But it was unusual to go into a porn theater, and we were tipped off by the bass player of the Quicksilver Messenger Service, right? So he comes to the studio and he says, your light show is in a XXX movie. So Scott and I went over there, and sure enough, at the points of the film which were too far to the extreme of sexual pleasure or, on the other side, sadism, suddenly there'd be this abstract image, which is all the light show was visual music, we used to call it. So they, you know, they'd get to this point in the drama.
Somebody stole your footage back then.
And I thought it was really funny, and I laughed and went home. But my partner didn't think it was funny at all, and he tracked down the producer, who turned out to be someone who had a lot of cash, because he ran the numbers game in San Francisco out of his head. He was a genius. And he was able to successfully pay off bets, but of course the house always wins. So he was very wealthy, and on top of that, he had this little hobby. So that
hobby.
I like that.
Yeah. And my partner promised that if he liked what we were doing, he'd make an out-and-out porn film, but that was really beyond his ken. So eventually... Carl Howard came by with his wise guy to enforce the loan that he had made. And my partner vanished and left me holding the bag.
So, wait, let's reiterate. You took money from a mobster to produce a porn film for him and did nothing, and then you were the guy left over.
I did something. I did something. I actually was very interested, not in porn, but in nudes. There was this production of The Blossom by Michael McClure, who was a poet in San Francisco. You probably never heard of him, but he was very well regarded there. And The Blossom was about Billy the Kid, and he was enamored of Billy the Kid. It was the second play he did about Billy the Kid. And the actress that played Billy's love interest came over to the studio, and I photographed her, and I think I did some really good work. I mean, the light show that I produced behind it was very well received.
Ah.
So I did do something.
Okay, but your partner didn't.
Well, my partner was like, he thought that the beautiful thing about sex was, you know, ejaculations and things. And I didn't. And I'm sorry, you know, that is not classical. You know, the classical thing is the curvature, and I was into that. But at any rate, when I was left alone with the wise guy showing me his silver-plated 45, I told them that they were very lucky to have my partner make a porn film, because he was a genius and it would be a great porn film, and that sufficed for the moment, you know. Yeah. And after that, I heard that the wise guy was standing in line to go into one of these movie theaters, and he was so excited, and he had his hand on his gun, that he pulled a trigger, and he literally shot himself in the foot, and he was no longer available to terrorize.
Wow.
Sounds like you got away with the skin of your teeth.
Wow.
I left town, but the thing is that almost immediately after I left town, Carl Howard, which is not his full name, he was Jewish, and... And so
that's,
you know,
a double first namer right there.
You know,
Howard Stein.
Moe's related to Moe and Shemp, or same last name in there, Jewish, right?
Anyway, he was busted.
Okay.
So, you know, miracles will happen.
Wow.
And that was one of them, of many. Berserkly is full of miraculous things. San Francisco was miraculous. But I came back to the area that has the Hudson River. I mean, you can't Good beat choice. That. You can't beat the weather here. I mean,
it's
better weather.
It's better weather.
Yeah. I mean, this area is rated as one of the survival spots after climate change is taking down almost every other.
Really?
Yeah.
This is true.
And
the according
after a nuke takes out the East Coast.
Hold on, I want to. According to what? What radar?
According
what
to, oh, we have mountains.
According
so
to the change
yeah.
in the human niche, which is mostly the Rust Belt.
Okay.
However, there's actually a little band of it that comes right down into the Hudson Valley, according to this human niche map of 30 or 40 years
into
in the
future. We're going to have water and
yeah.
other things that other humans won't have.
It'll be growing the crops that the South grows right
Downside.
Now.
We will have no energy. Unless we, New York, New England, learn to harvest energy from the ocean with tidal power plants, we will be buying it from the Midwest, which has all the wind and sun. So keep that in mind. We suck at natural energy around here. Hydroelectric, a little bit.
Oh,
that's mainly cash.
To power 82 houses.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I'm saying, like, that river right there, that whole thing, that's a lot of molecules going up and down 4 feet every day, twice a day.
Oh, that, yeah.
So,
that is
that's an energy producer. Get on it. Otherwise, literally, we will be buying it from Oklahoma.
Well, one thing that I saw that was recently sort of squashed by the environmental activist groups around here was an energy storage project up at Ashokan, or near Ashokan, somewhere in the mountains.
The Ashokan Reservoir.
Correct, the Ashokan Reservoir.
Oh, that project that they were going to do. They
right.
were going to,
they were gonna, you know, store potential energy by pumping water into columns and then release it down, you know, a shaft with a turbine as needed.
Yeah, it's a battery. They were going to do that at Storm King, and that got stopped.
What were they going to do that?
Storm King.
Where's that?
Oh, by
West
right
Point. On the river.
Yeah. You familiar with West Point? It's beautiful. Right behind West Point's a mountain made out of granite.
Mm. Oh, okay.
And they were gonna make a big bathtub up there, and fill it up when they had enough surplus energy, and then if the demand went up in New York City, they'd just pull the cork and water would come down. Very cool. But there was a environmentalist reaction to the notion of digging a hole on the top of this wonderful geological treasure.
Yeah.
So it didn't happen. But it did speak 25 years ago, or maybe 30 years ago, to the problem of storage and how are you going to store it if you do have the energy?
Mm.
Where you, you know,
giant,
where,
dangerous centrifuges.
Well,
more like a spinning flywheel.
Yeah, they do that like underground spinning giants.
No, this is real. These are exist and they use them. It's just basically really good bearings and a really heavy flywheel.
But
and it's like a object flying through space. You can't increase its mass, but you can increase its velocity.
Yeah,
and you can just pump more energy into it, more energy into it, more energy into it. And you want to get some of that back? You just hit some brakes on an electric motor, boom, pull some of the physical energy out of it.
Regenerate it.
The angle on this most recent one that got squashed was that it would raise, you know, even over its life, not just the construction, would raise the turbidity of the water so much that the wildlife in the creeks that feed the Ashokan Reservoir would die out and, you know, it would fundamentally change the ecology of...
Right, fish don't exist in that environment. That's a completely unnatural phenomenon of storage. So it isn't the best way. I like hydrogen. I really like hydrogen. If you have all that water, you might as well turn it into hydrogen.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it works, and that's like what they do in Norway. But because they have hydrothermal energy that's just sitting there, and they have tons of it, and they're like, well, what do we do with it? Let's run it through electrolysis devices and have some hydrogen fuel cells. That's because they have the luxury of being able to do it. We could do that, but we would probably have to fuel it with fossil fuels at the moment.
We have fueled it with the blood and tears of children, as is.
So, Brian, you said that actually some places in California have hydrogen fuel cell,
Well, it's the Toyota Mirai program.
Okay.
They've been doing that for at least 10 years, and you can go and fill it up, but the infrastructure has not gone anywhere past L.A., Orange County. And it's being made by it's being made at the power plants, so fossil fuels are being turned into it.
Yeah,
well, they have a lot but of excess.
See?
There is they make a lot of excess hydrogen.
Yeah, there is hydrogen and hydrocarbons.
Yeah,
I mean, not surprising, but it's a polluting way. It's not. It's what they call a gray hydrogen. Mm. It's not green. So to get green hydrogen, electrolysis from solar. I got in a lot of trouble last time I was on the show, and I started to rag about that. But no, I never got to the hydrogen. I never even got that
about
far.
Solar?
Yeah, I was talking about solar cooling, which is my thing because I invented that. But once you have that energy, making hydrogen is a good way to store it and distribute it. So the next part of my truncated rap was going to be about how, okay, you got this hydrogen. What can you do? You can cool it down really cold. Right? If it's cold enough, then you can have superconductors. So you have a hydrogen pipe, and inside the hydrogen pipe is superconductor ceramics. And these ceramics are able to transport enormous amounts of energy without loss. So you can take the sun that's in the desert, and it arrives elsewhere in the country without any loss. And then you have this hydrogen come with it, and that allows you to get the infrastructure that you mentioned, which is the... You can have your vehicles powered
for electrolysis, hydrogen.
Well, you get that electrolysis happening in solar.
That's all the way out in the Sahara.
Electrolysis?
Yeah. That's in the desert that are dry.
But then you transport it with superconductive ceramic tubes.
Right. You have a superconductive ceramic tube, and it comes all the way here.
For what?
And so you
distribute
You can then store it. You can store the energy that you need when the sun isn't shining in the form of hydrogen.
And then you run it through a fuel cell, turns into electricity, and water comes out the other end.
So there's no pollution. And then flesh it out, you know, the total package has nitrogen and a pipe outside the hydrogen. So that you have this inner core that's a superconductor, then you have liquid hydrogen, and outside of that you have nitrogen, which helps keep the hydrogen cold. And also, if there's a rupture, it's a fire extinguisher because nothing burns in nitrogen.
Mm.
So if the hydrogen gets up high enough above the atmosphere, and it goes up, hydrogen does go up.
Yeah.
If it starts to burn up there, it just turns into water and you get rain. The rain falls on the desert. The desert is done. I'm exaggerating.
It's not going to happen. The hydrogen is going to move basically up to the edge of space and be blown away by the solar wind.
Right. So
yeah, we probably won't have high-tech pipelines, but we can deliver them with trucks powered by diesel.
but we do have a lot of hydrogen in the form of water.
Yes.
So, you know, essentially the fuel is water. Water and sunshine.
But you got to still get the fuel in a package that
somewhere works.
So you got to put the energy into it first.
Well, the sun is producing a kilowatt per square meter at noon. So, you know, while it does taper off later in the day, I mean, there's so much energy.
There's so much energy landing in the desert.
Right? So we're going to have fields of energy collecting devices over the ocean, just sucking up the sun and converting that ocean water into hydrogen and shipping it onshore.
And potentially desalinating it for
fresh water. No. You don't need to desalinate it. You want the salt.
No,
if you
just want water to drink.
Hydrolysis, electrolysis works in with salt.
That's the beauty part. Yeah. You don't know. That process happens later. When you have your little power plant sitting on top of the ocean, it's just going to reach down, and I've done this. Kids, if you want to do electrolysis at home, all you got to do is go get one of those big, fat wall warts that you plug into the wall, and it gives you a couple of wires. Those wires will give you a DC. Yeah, I'm working on it. It'll give you a DC charge. If you stick that thing into salt water, put some salt into some water, you stick that in there, you will see bubbles form.
Bubble.
And the bubbles form at perfect levels. I don't remember which electrode forms which gas, but...
You better find out.
One of them's hydrogen, and one of them's oxygen. Yes. And you can find out, because if you put a vessel over each electrode and capture the gas coming off of it, H2O, you will get twice as much hydrogen as you do oxygen. The vessel with twice as much gas will be your H, and the other one will be your O. And right now, it is 7:30, and you are listening to WGXC.
Oh, my Acre. God. Wow.
Catskill.
Wow. Hudson. Wow. Did you see what he did? Did you see what he did there?
I saw what he did.
That was,
there.
That was magic.
And it was on time this time.
Yeah,
that's the important part.
ID right on time.
Right on. Yeah. That was awesome.
But yeah, I was relying on Big Ben for
but,
this.
Like I was saying, we need to have the generator sitting on top of the ocean. Sunlight goes down, powers all the electronics. It drops down into the already salt water. Perfect. Starts generating the gases. You don't even have to have sophisticated capturing devices. Those gases, what? Go up. Have what? Tubes over it. Capture tubes. The gas. And then you funnel that gas in perfect amounts of two different tubes.
A series of tubes.
Online. Onto the... a series of tubes. That if they have Tom Ceramic, will also probably be able to carry a large amount of information, too. Anyway, when you get to the end point where you need the electricity to be produced there, you recombine the oxygen and hydrogen by burning it. There's other ways to do it. Fuel cells will do it slower and a little more efficiently, but slower, and it takes more time. You don't get as much juice. So you burn the stuff.
Yeah.
And you got your pure drinking water right there from the ocean, already desalinated, leaving the salt where you want it to be useful.
Fair enough. All right.
Sounds way
it's
too
a
efficient.
Plan.
It might
Ding.
Make us
it's a plan.
It might make us overpopulate more and require more blood sacrifice.
Oh, okay. So what you need to do is you need to build these things out of human bodies. You start using humans as raw material, and then you solve that problem.
Wow. My shtick was that if you have the solar energy done correctly, it turns down the thermostat on the planet. And that was what
yeah,
I was
yeah,
that's
yeah.
what I was talking
yeah.
about last time. How many months ago was that anyway?
Five?
It was so long ago that I think my patent has expired.
Wow.
Well, you're peppering it in just right this time. It's working well. It's a good topic.
Yeah.
Although, I got a question, though, about turning down the thermostat. What happens to the Sahara when you turn down the thermostat? Does the monsoon change its location and then we get a green Sahara?
We're going to get that anyway.
I know.
5,000 years.
Yeah. Well, but does it happen sooner is what I'm asking.
Oh, we'll have to do Sahara Desert at home. We'll simulate
the weather.
We'll simulate the air currents. But right now, the Sahara's a mess anyway. So, you know.
So who cares? Dump some water on it.
As it has traditionally, you know, it's become, you know. It becomes that every 10,000, what is it, 20,000, is it a 20,000 year cycle or a 10,000 year cycle?
Oh, I can't remember, about 10,000, I thought.
Yeah.
Aren't
it's like a
12. Aren't particles from that stuff, like wreaking havoc in Germany every year and stuff like that?
What struck me about it was the irony that the same people that are messing up the planet with their black gold are sitting on top of the solar source that we need to do this trick. So
right,
they have air conditioners in Qatar and all these places that are making poison.
They have air conditioners in their beaches.
Yeah, right. Well, this would essentially do that.
Yeah,
it would.
The sand doesn't burn their feet. They have air conditioned beaches.
Yeah,
it's not air conditioned. It's cool beaches.
Cooled beaches.
Wow.
And, yeah, but this would have the effect of moderating that part of the planet that is overheating. But the thing that's important about the solar cooling is you don't have to get rid of the greenhouse gases, which it looks like we're not going to succeed at doing anyway. So if you have a way of turning down the thermostat in the face of this difficult situation with a blanket of methane and carbon dioxide.
Greenhouse gases are fine. You just take the Mr. Burns method with that one. You put a big shield up in the space. And
I think if we don't learn how to get rid of greenhouse gases, we'll really be shooting ourselves in the foot, like Mr. Howard.
His wise guy.
Yeah. Because what if a super volcano goes out, just blows its top,
mm-hmm.
or another mega colossal eruption like Kilimanjaro in the, what was it, the 18th? No, earlier. Back. Like 1600s.
I don't know. I'll have to ask a mastodon.
But, you know, that can cause its own little ice age, which, you
know,
it would be good if we could get rid of those.
What ifs. But the what if I'm concerned about is what if we don't get rid of the greenhouse gases in time?
Yeah, that's a what is.
And so, you know, if you have a thermostat, you can adjust it, you can turn it up, you can turn it down. And if there is a mini ice age, you can say, well, okay, we'll let the blanket do the trick, you know, and the greenhouse gas blanket, not the...
So you're talking like carbon
not the sulfide,
sequestration?
Not the sulfide cloud. That's what you're concerned about, which cools the planet. But you can stop cooling. And the novelty of what I was talking about is that it's a solar panel that either converts at a 100% efficiency or it sends the rest of the light that is not 100% right back up into space. And it's that mirror. Someone said that, you know, they had a shield idea. Geoengineering is scary stuff, and I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a ground level thing you can turn up and down depending on.
Isn't that like on the fly geoengineering?
It's a form of it.
Yeah,
that's for certain.
You have more control over it. As
you control
to like
how much
like
this. How much you reflect.
That's an assumption.
Instead of, you know.
No, it's not an assumption. That is known.
No. I'm saying the amount of control that you can have over these systems compared to each other, I think, is an assumption.
Well, I'm just saying you can control how much light is sent back up.
As far as controlling albedo, the albedo of the Earth.
That's it.
You'll have more control with something that's on the ground, and you actually have a knob to
you
twiddle
knob
instead
to
of
twiddle.
Just spraying the upper atmosphere
that's
with God
ridiculous.
Knows what.
That is crazy. That is dangerous crazy.
You know.
And shouldn't be done.
Some reflective chemical.
But what I'm talking about is a novel way, and believe me, I did the patent search. It's not in the literature. So, you know, solar cooling is a thing I invented, and I got in trouble for talking about it because, you know, put a cork in my mouth. Right? I can't stop myself. I went back to my high school in April 1st, my national holiday, and I talked for an hour about it.
Oh,
cool. And the kids got it, you know. Because they're going to have to deal with it. I won't be around. You'll be around, 28-year-old.
I don't know.
Oh, you're
maybe
you're
not.
Checking
future
out
me
early,
problem.
Huh?
Future me.
Who knows?
He's checking out early, apparently.
No, we're just moving north. I'm moving to Canada.
Canada.
So I solved that problem.
Yeah.
The green fields of Canada and what they will become.
Right. I don't know, man.
The United States will become a desolate desert for the cannibals, but. Desert and dry, and that's all that's going to be left is cannibals because they won't be able to grow food.
Soil and green.
We're going to run out of height. We're going to run out of fossil fuels, which is, you know, our main source for
obviously.
Fertilizer.
Obviously.
Oh, man.
We already are. I mean, with all this stuff that's going on in the world.
Wait till that problem hits.
That's dire.
Wait till that, like, oh.
Oh, it's hitting.
Like, if we were smart, that's like the only thing we would use fossil fuels for is fertilizer until the end of it, until it's gone, and then we figured out something else to fix that problem.
You still need to run heavy equipment, like earth, like extracting minerals from the earth.
It's called slave labor. No, you don't.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, in that case, you're still using the fossil fuels for the fertilizer that feeds the people that you use.
Not as much, and their rate of
calm down, Moek, okay?
Listen. No. They don't have to be children. They can be adults. The kids can have the kid, then, you know, when you're 18, in the chains.
Wow.
Made out of people!
Hi, look, so, I'm a problem solver. I'm taking care of, like, three problems there.
So making up that some Soylent Green fantasies? Soylent Green-fueled fantasies?
Sure. I mean...
Surely you've seen that.
I wouldn't go through the trouble of making the Soylent Green. They can just eat each other. Like, someone drops, throw them in the soup. In you go!
Oh, Jesus.
Wow.
You redistribute their shoes. In they go.
When did this turn into, like, the road?
I don't know, man. It's like everything in Joe's mind turns to the road.
I was like, oh.
People eating each other.
Because that's our future.
All life on Earth is dead.
Human
beings.
Tom is the one seeing the way out and what we could actually do about it. And I'm just going, we're too lazy, man.
We're too lazy.
I'm sorry. I hope you're right. Yeah. But I look around me and I go, oh, man, they're not going to be able to do that.
Yeah, I like that story being told because maybe people actually think.
Yeah.
If they see the alternatives.
Well, Joe's a dystopian and then I'm a utopian.
There you go.
And when the twain meet, we'll probably find common ground.
Yep.
He's the Eloi. And
well, this, look. Joe's wow. favorite intellectual property,
hey,
Star
remember,
Trek.
I fixed the machine on my way over here. Now I just got to eat somebody.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm sorry. Come on.
In his favorite IP, Star Trek, World War III still happens. The Eugenics Wars still happens. Humanity goes through, you know, various calamities and catastrophes prior to actually uniting as a planet and beginning to solve the problems that plague us nowadays. So even then, it's still, you know, that vision is still...
It took World War III and an almost entire nuclear destruction of the planet
right.
to actually get our stuff together.
Yeah, and Roddenberry's vision of
Sounds
what
right
the future would be like,
Sounds
which is still
right.
pretty dystopic. So
it's quite dystopic.
Yeah, but
you know,
guess what?
We'll have to
what
almost destroy ourselves
to
see what...
spaceships and interstellar exploration.
Well, it'd be nice if we could just skip all
or
the
Or a
the
red
stuff in the
smoking hole.
No. We must prove ourselves worthy. And in that process, we will come close to destroying ourselves. And then we find out what we're made of.
It sounds like, yeah.
That's
like
a filter.
The most likely filter.
I'm sorry.
Sorry, but it sounds pretty accurate to me. It's what we do.
Like, I'm talking about all the people that kill themselves, and there's going to be like 10% left, and it's going to be the Tom Ditto Express to the new planet, and those will be the humans that deserve to live.
I don't
wow.
know. I don't know if deserts could have anything to do with it.
Yeah, no,
survive.
It wouldn't.
No.
That's the whole point. It
doesn't
have anything to
but
do.
But that's the one time where those guys will probably be the smart ones that have
I don't know.
Together.
I'm voting that it's probably like White Power Steve hiding in his bunker with like the most guns and did the most depraved thing, and that's the dude who survived.
Nah, those guys go first.
They survive on the ground, but they're never going to make it off the ground.
This is true.
That's why, like, Elon Musk wants to take humans and put like what random humans on another planet? No, we haven't earned that yet. That's just spreading our problems to another planet. When Earth isn't, when we got our stuff together, everybody's happy. Well, okay, we don't got to be happy, but everybody is like productive, healthy. Nobody's really suffering. Nobody is starving. Nobody is stupid anymore. Yeah.
Nobody's
then
stupid
let's move.
Anymore.
Then let's add to the house.
Nobody's stupid anymore.
Well, that actually is my that's my view of evolution. And I got it from Roger Penrose, which is that evolution is just consciousness. So everything's conscious, and what we've come to is a level of consciousness that requires adaptation that's in the future, which is a higher form of consciousness, not Joe's Soylent Green consciousness.
No. You're speaking evolution. I'm speaking de-evolution.
Yeah.
You're speaking
well,
of
Ben says, you know, there'd be this white supremacist with his M16s or whatever they are called, AR-16s.
No, those guys go
and
first.
You know what? They go first. It's true, because if you put two dictators in the same room, only one lives, and that...
Or
you
zero.
Know,
or zero, yeah.
Zero, right. So they self-destruct more readily than, you know, people who limp-wristed like me. You know, I just want to get along. So, I mean, there are enough of us who just want to get along, that might be the last remnants of this consciousness. And this consciousness can evolve beyond what we have, which is the best yet, but it could be. Imagine what it could be. Like, there's Man and Superman of Shaw's play. You ever read that? It's got this intro that I think is very instructive about how, in the end, we're all just spirits and we float around and throughout the universe. So you dematerialize, you know.
We're going to ascend.
Yeah, like no. hydrogen. Like hydrogen.
No. Joe's like, yeah.
Like, oh, man. Like, yeah. Imagine if we did ascend today. Balls of energy carrying all that baggage.
Oh, God.
Imagine.
I don't know.
An interstellar non-corporeal war. This is what I'm thinking. Supernovas start going off.
So are we, like, talking Scientology, or...
Oh, wait.
What's your thetan level, Joe?
Yeah, I know.
It's higher than yours.
Of course.
He has more money.
I thought you shed the thetans with the more money you give.
Well, that you have to pay to find out which way that
you gotta
goes.
Pay until you're clear.
Yeah. That's the thing. I paid into the system more. So that's all that matters. I'll say my thetans are whatever, and the cash covers it.
Matter matters.
Gotcha.
We're going to have, like, men in black cars driving by. You guys keep talking.
That's okay.
Good. We'll invite them on, and they can talk.
We'll go to Jill's house, where there's only suppressive persons allowed. Yep.
Okay, we missing anything? Anybody got any projects they want to bring up?
No.
Oh, man. Very surprised, had.
Uh-huh. Wait, you got something?
No.
I was going to say, this whole audio setup
is cool.
This mini
you
setup?
You did a lot of work on it, so I'd like to just take a moment to admire the fact that you're making this work with, what is it, two like pocket-size podcasting tools and a 5-year-old Chromebook.
Brian, it's pizza time for me. Describe your equipment.
Pizza time. Okay, we got a Zoom H6 that's having 4 audio inputs in, 2 mics, and our weird Star Trek-y background bridge noises. Feeding into a Sentrance Portcaster with 2 more mics coming in. Going out a crappy 8-year-old Chromebook that's running Arch Linux that stays on all the time and doesn't crash. Unlike my new computers.
Very cool.
That's pretty cool.
Oh, wow. I wanted to say, Joe, the PinePhone doesn't count towards your experience with Arch Linux because you're doing something that a fraction of a percent of users of Arch Linux are doing.
So
not only that, you're not using Arch Linux as maintained by the Arch Linux for x86 64, you're using it Arch Linux ARM, are you not? That's a whole different set of maintainers. And also a development platform. So it doesn't count.
But
that's why.
But is it Arch?
It's Arch.
They're trying.
Is there Arch running in my pocket?
What defines Arch? I mean, really?
It's called Arch!
It's called that, but what is it really? Okay, so you have a rolling release of software, you know, to whatever degree the maintainers update it to, keep it updated to. You've got Linux, sure, that's a lot of different distros. And you've got Pac-Man. Like, what's the actual defining feature other than it's rolling and it's Pac-Man?
When I'm in that terminal and I'm like, Pac-Man, SYU, and give me something, it feels like Arch.
Wow.
Gosh darn it.
I mean, gosh darn it.
I don't know.
You just want to be mad at Arch.
I mean, the Sempron project, right? On the
laptop.
No. That wasn't even supported. That's Arch Linux
32-bit. Hardware.
Yeah, but I was
saying,
like,
Arch for any of its issues.
He could have gone with Sen.
Blameless.
Okay, so what's the problem then?
No, I just remarked that I'm using it every day.
Oh. You said you'd mentioned, as if it were somehow connected to your complaints increasing in frequency and intensity.
Oh, yes. I was using that circumstance to apply validity to my experience as well.
Wow.
Right. Okay. Just so we're clear on that. It has nothing to do with Arch Linux.
Welcome, Bunker.
Well, I don't disagree. I set Christian up with Kubuntu on his new Lenovo Yoga.
There's nothing wrong with it. It works. It's a good workhorse.
It works.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Arch is, you know, a little flashier. A little more bells and whistles. A little more up to date. A little more bleeding edge. A little more, I'm going to crash and screw you at the last minute.
Maybe.
No, yeah.
A little bit.
Just there.
Sometimes. Not too often, though. I haven't had much to complain about.
What was that?
No news is good news.
Mm.
There you go. Hey, we got 10 minutes left.
That's
we can just sit here and, like, stare at each other.
Community radio, the finest.
What'd you say?
I said community radio at its finest.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Well, we are having a picnic. So.
We are having a picnic outside.
Yeah, that was quite nice.
Some nomming involved.
They can hear every time, like, a bottle comes up. It's like, hey, is somebody drinking?
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody?
Sorry. That was the guy sneaking pretzels.
You know, I suggested this before the show started, and it's actually happening, and I'm just so happy. I suggested that we just have an entire show full of the sounds of eating and crinkling and
burping.
Yeah, picnic noises.
That's good.
we're slowly veering from show about technology into one of the more artsy shows.
There you go.
Performance art.
Somebody get a theremin.
Get a theremin?
What did he even say?
That's one of our project ideas, isn't it? Like a theremin that works like a theremin, but it sounds like a Geiger counter. When you put it close to somebody, it starts going.
You can just get a regular Geiger counter for that.
Yeah, and then you just have a button that makes the noise. Screw them.
If you get a real Geiger counter, you actually have to have real radiation, which you might not have at the
here, eat this banana.
Time. Yeah, right. Eat this banana.
Install any smoke detectors.
It's more. It's more radioactive than thorium-233.
International airplane flights? Yeah. Brr, lit you up.
So this means that we can get power from banana peels, isn't it, right?
Mm. You can get power from potatoes.
Mm.
Let's see. You got phosphorus decay in the
banana.
Bananas.
Yeah. No, it's potassium.
Potassium decay, sorry.
Not phosphorus.
It's K, not P. So what does it put off? If it's...
I don't know.
If it's radioactive, it's putting off some type of particle. It's an alpha particle, a beta particle. Could be something heavier.
Probably an alpha particle.
Well,
alpha or beta. Those are less dangerous.
Yeah, those can be blocked with a sheet of paper.
Right.
Those.
Have you heard about the Savannah bananas?
No, I've not heard of Savannah bananas. Tell me about them.
Oh, no.
Let's go back. Well, they wear bright yellow uniforms on the baseball diamond, and they dance.
Darn it. I thought you were going to talk about something that was going to supplant Cavendish when Cavendish eventually just goes extinct because of a plant pathogen.
Of a blight or a plague. Yeah. It just takes it all out.
Well, that'll do in the Savannah bananas if they can't pass bananas out to the adoring crowd that comes to see them dance.
But, yeah, if they just start passing out plantains.
But it's real. It's real. I watched them perform. So.
Crap.
Check out the Savannah bananas. That's all I can say. It's brought life back to a very boring sport.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, they're
sport?
Baseball.
Baseball.
Oh. It's all like an attempt to make people interested in baseball because somebody realized baseball's boring, so they started dancing and dressing up like bananas and be like, "This'll work because people are into zany stuff."
It's always amusing to me as a captain on Deep Space Nine is he like the only one and his son interested in baseball? He's the only one.
No, and there's like even like a baseball league somewhere out there too in the future, and he has to go find it because like, no, Cassie.
Her brother. Yeah. Anyways, again, sidetracked. Yeah. Baseball.
As Ken Barron said, baseball's the sport where the defense has the ball. Think about that. All those other ones, you know, the offense
has the ball.
Yeah. They're very aggressive sports, but baseball is, you know, something you can sort of fall asleep and relax, and you're probably not needed.
Baseball's in a field. Football is on a gridiron.
Oh, you pulled that straight out of Carlin's bit.
Oh,
didn't
yeah.
you?
I don't want to keep going.
Gridiron.
Is that just straight plagiarism? I can do better. But yeah, baseball's a little.
What is lacrosse played on? Pitch?
A field?
That's
goats.
Football. Soccer. Anyway.
What's Hyalai played on?
Soccer is played on a pitch.
Hyalai.
What's that?
I think a court, right?
Hyalai?
Hyalai's played indoors.
Hyalai is like lacrosse, except they use a ball of granite and people die.
Is that
is it granite? It's not a ball.
Is that
I think it's pretty good.
Is that the Mayan sport?
Yeah. So Aztec.
Ooh. Well, it's not
Aztec sport.
It's like a betting sport.
We can
now,
use
right?
your head for this.
But you get scoops. You get big like scoops that you get strapped to your arm for this.
Right.
And imagine the thrust you can get out of a hard ball rolling out of a scoop on the end of your arm as opposed to a little.
Yeah, I'm sure they got the concept from something that they were using for hunting.
It's basically a trebuchet on your arm with a.
Yeah.
Sure.
Have you heard of the otolotl?
What's the otolotl?
It's basically what you describe. It's a scoop that you hold like this behind you, and the spear goes in it.
Oh, yes.
And it increases the lever arm of your throw, so you can throw,
it's the chucker
40 miles
stick
an hour.
For The spear.
Yeah. Instead of your actual arm being the chucker stick, you actually have a stick that's been scooped out.
With the chucker thing you got for the dogs when you huck the ball farther, it's that, except instead of a ball, you put the butt end of a spear there. Yep. And you launch the whole spear like you're launching that dog's ball.
And you can use it
in New York. In my direction.
Tom, I'm just violently gesturing towards him because I'm facing him.
He's right between the ears now.
You can use that in New York during the other weaponry. I think during like the black powder, you know, what do you call it? Muzzle loaded part of the season. You can use otolotls as well. I mean, if you're good enough.
Skilled enough. Yeah. I mean, that's like killing something with a sling. That's not easy.
Yeah.
You ever try that?
No.
Sling? Try to just a rope with a little piece of cloth at the end of it and a rock?
To, like, hit something?
Yeah, it's
like
easy David to wrap Goliath. It around your own neck, actually.
Yeah.
it's hard.
Now, if you had no life, no TV, no girl, and nothing else to do, I could see someone becoming good at this. But not nowadays. You just go get a gun.
I imagine the otolotl is a little bit easier than the sling. I don't know why, but I feel like it might be.
Yeah, because you can kind of like aim at least in a certain direction. The sling, you have to let go of it at just the right time.
Yeah, you're not just spinning it around your head.
That's a trebuchet. You can aim with it. Is a sling is like an arm trebuchet.
A trebuchet is like a counterweighted.
Yeah.
Sling.
You're the counterweight.
Counterweighted catapult.
Yeah.
Counterweighted catapult.
That's pretty good. I like that sound.
Mm-hmm. Although I'm not sure about what's the difference of a construction of a catapult. Does it just go by tension?
It doesn't have the counterweight.
Oh, it's
just spring loaded.
Oh, okay.
Crank it up. Yeah. And
the trebuchet has to have that extra length of rope and the sling at the end. It needs that.
And that's ballast. What makes it a trebuchet. Big old thing for the ballast, a box.
And though that's why they're devastating. They put so much more energy into the projectile because it has more time to. Catapults are just bing and away you go. And when you stop a catapult dead at the end, that's a lot of wasted energy.
Yeah.
You're not getting that in a trebuchet.
Yeah, trebuchet is good for throwing your cattle around.
Yeah.
Or a diseased body.
Hey.
Early biowarfare, they used to do that.
Oh, yeah,
here's a plague body.
Rotting cows.
Oh.
Your CJ gonna last too long?
No.
And you know, even if that doesn't make you sick, the smell will. What are you warning me that our time is coming to an end? So I need to tell people if they want to keep listening to us, they need to go hurriedly to wgxc.org, click on listen, and look for the Thingularity stream in that little window that pops up. That way, you'll be able to catch a hold of our after show where we're not bound by FCC rules. And it gets a little bit more fun, but who knows how long it lasts.
George Carlin comes back.
Yeah, that's
dead.
Right. We're going to say all the words.
And gets his revenge!
And some new ones that you haven't heard yet.
And a couple of that. You know what? There's even words we won't say. Holy crap, we have standards.
We do have standards.
For about another minute and a half.
No. Even after that minute and a half, I know there's stuff that we won't say just because we're decent folk. And it's not the FCC words.
Hey,
yeah, I know.
It's not those words. Everybody says those. Every 10-year-old says those words.
10-year-olds?
Yes.
Wow, they're getting bad.
Are you kidding me?
Oh,
I know
yeah.
seven. I am not joking. I know 7-year-olds.
Right?
That, yeah.
They're not. They're not, I'd say, a normal level of swearing, but they might even have a couple bilingual words in there, too. So, yeah.
Oh, that's...
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Language is colorful. So, if you guys want to listen, you head over there. And if not, then you just continue on.